Welcome back to the deep dive. Really looking forward to getting into this stack of material you sent over.
Me too. Some fascinating stuff in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So our mission, like always, is to cut through the noise, get past the headlines, and really equip you with the core insights.
Getting straight to the point.
Exactly. And today, we're diving deep into how countries are, well, characterized at different stages of development. It's not just about labels, right? It's about understanding the dynamics underneath.
And that's so important because these characteristics, they're not just academic. They're the lens we use to look at global challenges, to think about economic policy, and ultimately how countries can achieve sustainable growth.
Right.
So, by digging into population, income, economic structure, you'll basically get a shortcut to being, really well informed on the global economic scene.
Okay, let's unpack that. Starting right at the foundation population. That often seems like the first big signal, doesn't it? The most obvious sign of where a country stands.
It really is. Yeah, it's a great place to start.
So what are the key things we measure when we talk population dynamics?
Well, first off, you got the birth rate.
Yeah.
That's simply live births per 1,000 people each year. And the differences are, well, they're stark.
Yeah.
In low-income countries, birth rates tend to be much higher. There are lots of reasons. Cultural factors, maybe less access to contraception. Sometimes kids are needed for labor. And often, lower female education levels play a big part.
Which delays family planning, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then you look at high-income countries, and it's the opposite. Lower birth rates. Why? Generally, much better access to education, robust family planning services, more women in the workforce. It
Yeah.
all adds up.
Okay. And then the flip side, the death rate. Deaths per
Well,
thousand.
right. And as you'd expect, underdeveloped nations often struggle here. Higher death rates due to poor healthcare systems, maybe issues with sanitation, malnutrition is often a factor, and sadly, conflict too.
But that changes as countries develop.
Dramatically. You see death rates fall significantly,
Yeah.
better medical care, cleaner water, more reliable food supplies that make a huge difference.
And linked to that, there's one indicator that's particularly, well, grim, but tells you a lot. The infant mortality rate.
Yeah, that's deaths of infants under 1 year old per 1,000 live births. It's a really powerful indicator.
Why so powerful?
Because a high rate is like a flashing warning light. It signals serious problems with public health infrastructure, access to basic medical care. It tells a really deep story about a nation's overall health.
Got it. And then there's movement, right? People moving between countries. Net migration.
Exactly. Just the difference between immigration people coming in and immigration people leaving.
And what does that tell us about development levels?
Oh, a lot. It's about push and pull. Developing countries often have negative net migration, people leaving.
A brain drain sometimes.
Often, yeah. It's frequently the more educated, the skilled workers who leave, looking for better opportunities elsewhere or maybe escaping instability. And that outflow can really hurt a country's long-term prospects.
Whereas developed countries pull people in.
Typically, yes. Positive net migration. They attract talent, labor. People are drawn by better jobs, more security, perceived higher quality of life.
Okay, so these dynamics are fundamental, but what happens if the numbers get out of whack with the resources? Too many people, or maybe too few. That brings us to this really interesting idea, optimum population. Sounds a bit theoretical.
It does, but it's actually a very practical economic concept.
Well, so.
Well, optimum population is basically the theoretical sweet spot. The population size that, given a country's resources and technology, allows for the highest possible income or output per person. It's about peak efficiency.
Okay.
So if a country's overpopulated, there are just too many people for the resources to support properly. That often means high unemployment, poverty,
Right.
and the opposite is underpopulation. Too few people to really make the most of the country's resources. That can lead to low productivity, untapped potential.
So the goal is hitting that balance.
Exactly. Hitting that optimum point means better economic efficiency, better social welfare. But, what's fascinating is that it's really hard for any country to stay at that optimum point for long.
Why is that?
Because populations change, resources change, technology changes. It's constantly shifting. It's less like a fixed target and more like trying to stay balanced on a moving platform.
That's a great way to put it. Okay, building on population, let's talk urbanization. Cities are growing everywhere, but how they grow seems to tell different stories.
Absolutely. Urbanization itself is just the rising percentage of people living in cities. Simple enough. But yeah, the character of it varies hugely.
So in developed countries,
Highly urbanized, yes, but usually with pretty well-planned infrastructure, good transit, reliable utilities, planned housing, parks, you know, systems designed to handle large populations.
And in developing countries.
Often it's rapid and sometimes quite chaotic. Unplanned growth, you get sprawling informal settlements, slums popping up, maybe major pollution problems, and public services like water, power, sanitation just get completely overwhelmed.
What's driving that rapid, sometimes uncontrolled shift?
Well, the pull factors are strong. Industrial jobs, the hope of better wages in the city, better schools, better healthcare.
Makes sense.
But the downside can be huge. This massive rural to urban migration leads to intense overcrowding in cities, creating all sorts of social pressures. And at the same time, you can get rural areas emptying out, becoming underdeveloped.
So understanding these shifts, these demographic changes, it really helps you see the core challenges nations face, doesn't it? From healthcare planning to job creation, even how they design their future cities.
Precisely. It's foundational.
Okay, so we've got the people covered. Now, what does this all mean for how wealth, how income gets spread around within a country? This gets us into economic fairness, right? Or sometimes the lack of it.
Exactly. And we have some pretty neat tools to visualize and measure income inequality. The first one is the Lorenz curve.
Okay, Lorenz curve. How does that work?
Imagine you line up all the households from poorest to richest. The Lorenz curve plots the cumulative percentage of total income against the cumulative percentage of households.
Bit technical.
Yeah. Okay, think of it like this. If income was perfectly equal, like everyone got the exact same slice of the pie, the Lorenz curve would just be a straight diagonal line, 45 degrees. We call that the line of perfect equality.
Right.
But in reality, the curve always bows below that line. And the further it bows away, the more unequal the income distribution is in that society. It's a visual snapshot of inequality.
Okay, I can picture that. And there's a number that goes with this curve.
Yes, that's the Gini coefficient. It basically takes the information from the Lorenz curve and turns it into a single number.
How is it calculated, roughly?
It's the ratio of the area between the perfect equality line and the actual Lorenz curve, compared to the total area under the perfect equality line. It gives you value between 0 and 1.
0 means?
0 means perfect equality.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone earns the same. Impossible in reality, of course.
And what?
1 means perfect inequality. One person has all the income. Also impossible. So real countries fall somewhere in between.
And do we see patterns based on development?
Definitely. Developed countries usually have lower Gini coefficients, maybe in the 0.2s to 0.4s range, often because of things like social safety nets, progressive taxes.
Things that redistribute income a bit.
Exactly. Whereas developing countries often have much higher Gini coefficients, maybe 0.5, 0.6, or even higher sometimes. This often reflects unequal access to things like good education, healthcare, even basic property rights.
So these tools, the curve and the coefficient, they give us a way to actually measure fairness.
That's the idea. What's really key here is that these aren't just dry statistics. They tell a really powerful story about social equity, about stability or potential instability within a nation. You know, if you see a country's Gini rapidly increasing, that's often a sign of growing social tension.
Right. For you listening, these tools give a clear way to kind of quantify and see that economic fairness or lack thereof. Helps understand maybe the roots of well-being or sometimes discontent.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've talked population, we've talked income distribution. Let's shift now to the engine room of the economy. How people are employed, what stuff countries actually make and trade.
Right, the economic structure. This tells us a huge amount. We usually break employment down into three main sectors.
Okay.
First is
the primary sector. Think farming, fishing, mining, forestry. Basically extracting raw materials from the earth.
And that's dominant where?
Typically in less developed countries. They often rely heavily on natural resources, maybe lots of subsistence farming where people grow just enough to survive. Productivity in this sector is often quite low, partly due to lack of technology, lack of capital investment.
Okay, primary. Then
a secondary sector. This is manufacturing and industry, making things, building things.
Like factories?
Exactly. This sector grows as countries start to industrialize and urbanize. You see a big shift of labor out of agriculture and into factories. Think of the newly industrialized countries that's often driven by growth in the secondary sector.
And finally, the third one, the tertiary sector. This is the service sector.
So banking, retail.
Yep. Finance, healthcare, education, retail, tourism, IT, all services. This sector really dominates in developed economies. And crucially, it's usually associated with much higher productivity, higher wages.
Why is that?
Because it tends to rely more on skilled labor, advanced technology, good infrastructure. So the overall picture, the trend as countries develop, is a shift. Primary to cage or secondary, tertiary.
Fewer farmers, more factory workers, then eventually more service workers.
Basically, yes. It shows the economy diversifying, moving towards activities that add more value, becoming more complex and, well, modern.
Which I guess raises a big question about where countries fit in the global economy, how they trade with each other.
That's exactly right. And the trade patterns reveal so much about development levels.
So let's look at developed economies first. What do they typically trade?
They tend to export high-value stuff. Capital-intensive goods, high-tech products, think complex machinery, pharmaceuticals, airplanes, sophisticated electronics.
And services, too.
Big time. They're major exporters of knowledge-based services, finance, consulting, education, software, IT services. They often run trade surpluses in services, and generally they have better access to global markets.
Okay. Now, contrast that with developing economies. What are they usually selling to the world?
Predominantly, it's primary commodities.
Like the stuff from the primary sector we just talked about.
Exactly. Coffee beans, cocoa, crude oil, copper ore, raw cotton, basic textiles, that kind of thing.
And that makes them vulnerable.
Hugely vulnerable. Commodity prices swing wildly on global markets. Demand can suddenly drop. So their national income can be really unstable. It makes planning very difficult.
And they often import manufactured goods.
Yes. They frequently run trade deficits because they need to import machinery, technology, even consumer goods that they don't produce themselves.
So what are the big issues for them in trade?
Well, that commodity dependence is a major one. It can trap them in a cycle of low, unstable income and limits development. Then there are often unfavorable terms of trade, basically. The price of their exports doesn't rise as fast as the price of their imports. They have to sell more coffee just to buy the same tractor.
Feels like an uphill battle.
It often is. So a critical need for these countries is to diversify their economies.
Yeah.
Move away from just relying on one or two commodities and to add value to their products. Mm. You know, don't just export raw logs, export furniture. That's how they can become more competitive.
And these trade patterns, they're not just abstract economic lines on a chart. They affect the prices you pay for coffee or gas, the clothes you buy, the stability of the whole global market. It really connects back to all of us.
Absolutely interconnected.
Okay, wow. We have covered a lot of ground. Started with those core population dynamics, the birth rates, death rates, migration, that fascinating idea of optimum population.
That balancing act.
Yeah. Then we look at income distribution using the Lorenz curve and Gini coefficient to really see inequality.
Visualizing fairness.
Exactly. And then we dug into the economic structure, that shift from primary to secondary to tertiary sectors, and how that shapes what countries trade and their place in the global economy. Put it all together, and it really does give you a much richer picture of a nation's development journey.
It really does. And if we just, you know, connect this to the bigger picture, understanding these differences, these characteristics we discussed, it's absolutely crucial. Crucial for grasping why some global challenges hit certain countries harder. Crucial for designing development policies that actually work. And honestly, crucial for anyone trying to understand our interconnected world.
It really sets the stage. So thinking about everything we've discussed, especially those vulnerabilities in developing economies relying so much on commodities, facing chaotic urbanization, here's something to mull over. How might massive global trends like climate change hit them disproportionately? How could it derail their efforts to diversify and grow sustainably?
Yeah.
And what does that imply for us as a global community, knowing how linked our fates really are? Definitely something to think about.
A critical question for our times.
Indeed. Well, thank you again for sending in all those sources and for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.